whack it in dry.
You know, we went and played golf the other day, and my father-in-law said, "Oh, that one peppered the bushes."
Welcome along to 30-something Gamers, episode 8. Yes, it's only been a week. You haven't had a stroke. We've just changed the format. We are going to be going through loads of stuff today. We're going to say thank you for joining us today. How are you doing at the minute, Boxy?
I'm feeling good, mate. As the power of editing says, we're hot off the back of the last one. We're a dragon soup down. We're about half a bottle of wine in. So we're feeling frisky. And what? I'd say frisky in the aggressive, good communication style, not horny.
Speak for yourself. But when we say we're in for the dragon soup, can I just say when I've had one can, it is a half a litre can. That's when all... Oh gosh, it is 7.5%.
I feel like I'm trying... hair on your, yep, hair on your already hairy chin.
Right, so in between... Like Boxy just said, we are recording this straight off the back of the last episode, so I am that deep. But he's trying to show off. He's trying to be this cultured jazz musician with his red wine sitting. He's wearing a beret and a black and white horizontal striped t-shirt, and he just keeps clicking at us like that rather than clapping when I say a really good joke, and I'm not on with it. So I'm standing up for the North. We aren't all just dragon soup radiation drinking idiots. We're going for this one now, Boxy.
Oh, that still looks like shit.
This is lamb spiced rum, and it is a very nice spiced rum. And I drink like a dirty pirate, okay? I love a spiced rum.
And neat. I'm...
No, just rum. Pirates drink rum, don't they?
Yeah, no, I said, are you going to drink it neat?
No, I've got Dr. Pepper.
Dr. Pepper and rum?
Don't knock it till you've tried it.
I didn't realise you were 17.
I've tried it up the culture with my drink.
If you said to me you were drinking rum neat out of a...
What pirate? Ooh. What pirate drinks rum neat on in a glass with one ice cube refrigerated to exactly -1 degrees?
What pirate drinks rum mixed with something that tastes like fizzy Benelin?
Fizzy Benelin is top draw. As Forrest Gump attested to when he drank 12 in the White House.
He did. It's not a bad drink. It's pretty out
there. It's top tier. It's the best. It's the best pop. It's Diet Coke, Coke Zero, Pepsi. It is the best out of all of them.
I think Dr. Pepper, they haven't done one in years, but Dr. Pepper had some of the best marketing back in the day with their TV adverts. There's that one where a lad's come to pick up his date for prom and the dad challenges him to a wrestling match and he ends up like beating him senseless, the child, and then his date comes down and he's got like a hammer like aimed at his dad, and I thought, oh, that's so good. Dr. Pepper, what's the worst that could happen?
That was the tagline. They were great adverts. Adverts were just so much better. Every time now and again I'll have like a flashback to how great TV and adverts and stuff. And when people say, oh, adverts used to be great, of course they used to be bigger because adverts were watched by like millions of people. Now they're not, because you've got that many streaming services and stuff like that. You don't have to, so they're not going to put the money into them. But every now and again, I'll get a flashback and I'll get the adverts up for my kids to watch. Well, the 3-year-old, obviously the 9-month-year-old doesn't know what's going on. You know, the Dairy Milk, the glass and a half advert. So we started with the Phil Collins Gorilla on the Drums, and my little boy, Mini Retro, absolutely loved it. So we went through all of those, the eyebrows, the guy with, yes, sir, I can boogie, that one, and on all those. But then went on to like the Milky Way, the red car, the blue car, had a race, and all of those just so top tier, amazing. And then I found out my 3-year-old, his favourite thing in the world is dancing babies. Because we ended up on the Evian adverts, and he just loves a CG baby dancing. I don't know what to make of it.
I remember that one. Yeah. Oh, this is bringing my nostalgia back. I do remember that. And dancing babies always reminds me of the music video for Don't You Want Somebody to Love, which was the remix song.
Was that where they were parachuting?
Yeah, onto a naked lady.
She's not naked.
Well, she was skimpily,
scantily clad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a bit odd.
Well, it's not, because what do babies like?
Can we move on from this? I don't know. We're in dangerous territory.
We are. We always just get to that edge, and I feel like it's always you that pull us back. So let's move on. We talked about what you've been playing the last couple of weeks, but I know you're probably more excited for the games that I've been playing the last couple of weeks, because obviously because I stream, you know the things I've been playing, and you know they tickle your itch. So
they really do, and I have dipped in and out of your lives a little bit over the past few days, but I do need a full-on opinion of this.
Okay.
So go on then. I know you've been firing away at Silent Hill 2.
Yeah.
Tell me it's a masterpiece.
So I played Silent Hill 2 for the first time ever. Actually, this time last year, I never played a Silent Hill game. And Halloween, I played Silent Hill 1. So it's a sort of thing on stream now. I thought, well, I'll experience them going through. And yourself, so many people in my community have said, play Silent Hill 2, it's a masterpiece. Because Silent Hill 1, I was like that with, and I knew that was a lot of going back to the PS1, the controls, when I didn't play it, like sort of when it came out, if you know what I mean. So yeah, it lost a little bit of its scariness because of the graphics and stuff like that. Silent Hill 2, here we go. The podcast could end here, couldn't it? The podcast could end here.
It could. We're on a fulcrum at the moment. Is that the right word? Fulcrum?
I would have said knife's edge.
Could go one way or the other.
Yeah.
Knife's edge, yeah, definitely.
So, really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it. Now,
that's not good enough.
I did really enjoy it. There's two things you've always got to put in with this. When you play a game on stream, it's a lot different from playing it on your own. I did have people. So what I do is when I play a new game, I say there's no backseating, which basically means don't tell us what's going to happen and what to do all the time and stuff like that. But my community is really good. I always say if I'm going around in circles and it's boring the stream and stuff like that, nudges in the right direction. And they're always quite good at that. So there was never parts where I was really stuck or anything like that because I had gone through. To be fair, I don't think I would have got stuck for a long time. The odd time I might have been going around for a little bit, but it's not that type of thing. And the puzzles I left on normal, and some of the chat were quite impressed with how well I got them. I did really like the puzzles. I thought the puzzles were really quite clever.
You say you like the puzzles, which is great, and I think most of the puzzles are fantastic. Did you figure out the horseshoe and wax puzzle?
Is that where you use it as a handle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You figured that out?
Straight away. It wasn't even. You've got to remember, I've been playing Monkey Island, Day of the Tentacle, Grim Fandango. And it's that, for me, it's the game in sight, you know, with 30 years, is this is a thing I need to use an item on. These are the items I've got. How could I work them? I was there for a little bit trying to just put the wax in. And the way that you, what would have got me and why I would have walked away and it would have took me ages is the way you combine them. We have to combine all three in your menu and then it works. If I didn't have people in the chat telling me that, because I said, oh, well, I've got to melt the wax and then use it as a handle. But I tried to like combine the lighter with the wax to put it in, then put the handle in. And that didn't work at first. If I was on my own, I'd have walked away and thought that mustn't be the right thing. Getting working out, but the chat to say, oh, combine all three in your menu and it'll work. Yeah, I got that. I'm a clever boy. We know from Rockbusters last time.
No,
and I've stayed away from a lot of Silent Hill 2 lore because I knew at one point I wanted to play them.
Yeah.
My community were very impressed with things I worked out as I was going through. In regards to I quite early on worked out, and this is the thing, again playing on chat, I worked out that a lot of the things, at first I thought they were all James's psyche, the enemies and stuff, they were all his. I think someone had to tell me near the end, well no, I think right near the end where there's the stairs with the fire and what's her name at the top?
Angela,
that's when I realised the enemies are actually the real people's different sort of psychic, so the face in the bed thing was her, like, sort of psychological thing there. At first, I thought, what, and I was trying to work it out. And from that, I worked, well, again, I've not looked at theories yet, so I don't know if I'm right. From that, I worked out that Pyramid Head was sort of James. Sunderland is like sexual frustration, anger type thing. I worked that out. And then when he was going 10 to the dozen on a nurse and killing them, I knocked out a comment. I didn't really think about it. And the community mentioned early on, I said, well, if that's James, that's his wife, he's probably killed his wife. So I did get that quite, but I didn't like in my head go, oh, so that's it. I just by the chance mentioned it, and then by the end sort of realised it was that. And I did think it was really well sort of written. Mm. I do agree with you when we go back to our argument about difficulty and changing the combat maybe to easy on that one. I can remember running around fighting in a loft. She sends flies at you when you like trying to shoot her.
The end boss.
Yeah. That boss was so, like, crap. Like, yeah, it took so long. I thought, there's no need for it to take this long. I'm not playing this game, like you said, to have a difficult boss fight. Mm. It's all about the story. It's all about the puzzles. So those bits like that, that took it away from being, again, if I played it as a kid, it could be up my top 10, but it can't be for me because I just thought, and some of the items, I don't know if you've seen my video, but there's a box of pubes. I've not looked in again to lore. Is that supposed to mean something? There's a box. If you've not played the game right, a box. It's got like a chain around it, a padlock, a number combination. You have to use a key card. You have to use five things on it. And you open up and there's pubes inside it. What's that about?
Okay, first of all, it's not pubes, disgusting human being.
It is. It's James Sunderland's Merkin box.
It's a strand of hair.
Pube.
And it's a side... It's a side story.
No. I'll tell you what it is. If you're putting that much security on a hair, it better be a pube and not from the head, because there's no reason to keep a head hair that well protected.
Yes, there is. And if you followed the side story...
What side
story?
Who's side story?
God, off the top of my head, I think...
There's the fat guy, Eddie.
No, it's nothing to do with them.
Annabelle.
It's nothing to do with them. It's like I don't know if it's a father and daughter relationship, and the daughter got lost, and the father was protecting it. Please don't quote me on that. I need to look into it again. But it's one of the best sort of fake out moments in gaming history.
It is great. Like, I was expecting something amazing in this box with the amount of locks were on it.
And in the remake, have you played the remake?
Well, I got told by lots of people, play the second one first, then do the remake. So I've not played the remake. I want to play the second one first. Because as well, I will come back and I'll have this conversation with you when I've played the remake. I feel people who played it back in the day say Silent Hill 2, the original's better.
Yes.
And I feel like people who come into it at this stage, because I was talking to Liam, Retro Revisit, if you don't know, he was in my chat and I went, right, you've only played them recently. Which one do you prefer? And he said the remake. So I don't know whether it's a when you played it that decides which one you prefer.
I say the OG one is...
One of your favourite games of all time, isn't it?
It is, but I appreciated the remake. I thought it did some really cool things. And I think in many ways it is better. Well, no, in some ways it's better. But as an overall experience that you can't touch the PS2 version, it's just so well done. And I'm so impressed with your analysis of what's happening in that game, because as you say, there's so many much deeper meaning going on. Mm-hmm. And as you say, James is seeing his own version of hell, and Eddie and Angela, they're all going through their own personal kind of torment. Mm-hmm. And Silent Hill is the redemption, if you want to call it that, or the punishment. And I said in a video that you could argue that Silent Hill is doing good things for people like Eddie and James, but with Angela, it's just brutal. It's so horrible because it's implying that she was very abused when she was young. And
I made, as you might see, I put my foot in it. I made a...
What a surprise.
I made a reference to something that was like in the screens of when it was on. I was like, wait, and someone went... If you knew our story, that's really not a good job. I was like, I'm really sorry. I don't know. It was quite early on when you first meet her. And let's just say it was a glory hole joke. And people went, that's not a good taste if you knew our story. But I'm sorry, I don't know our story. And then by the end, I was like, yeah, that's not good. That's not good at all. But then maybe they were supposed to look like that.
Maybe.
Because it's the psyche thing. Because there was things coming in and out of these holes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's what it's implying. Yeah. And I think they did Angela better in the remake, personally.
Right.
When you get to Round's Paper, see what you think. But yeah,
You might know, because this is a question I had, I don't think I got an answer from our community. When it comes to Silent Hill, right, do the people, so Eddie, Annabelle, James, have to have a connection to Silent Hill for it to sort of call them? Because James obviously stayed there with his wife, but I don't know about the other two. Or is it just someone that's had such big like PTSD, torment, whatever in their life, that the town sort of brings them in? Or do they have to have some connection to Silent Hill before it'll call them back?
Judging from the canon, like outside of Silent Hill 2,
Mm-hmm.
you could probably say it could happen to anybody.
Right, okay.
Have you read the theory that his wife is in the boot of his car
Oh no.
when you first start the game?
I mean, here's a sign of a good game. I'm not putting up my top 10, my pantheon, anything like that. But I would be interested in playing it again. And knowing what I know now, taking stuff in, I'd probably glean more from it. Like someone told me at the end, and I thought, the little girl can't see anything that James sees because she's innocent. She hasn't had any trauma. She doesn't have any psychological issues. So there was a point where he's like, "Oh, Ollie," and she's like, "What are you talking about? I can't say anything." And I didn't make that connection. Someone at the end went, "It's because she's innocent, so she doesn't see these things." And I was like, "Ah." Oh. So I'd like to, again. That makes us want to say, "I'll play through again and take more like sort of notice of the things that are happening," which I think is a sign of a great game, to be fair.
And there's always a joke in the community, where did Eddie get his pizza from? But because of who Eddie is, food is his weakness, and Silent Hill gives him that, because it's tormenting him.
Question I asked that my community went, I've never seen anyone mention that, and I don't know why they would. When Pyramid Head first came up, I went, is it a square-based pyramid or a triangular-based pyramid? But I think that's just the primary school teacher coming out on us. It's a triangular-based pyramid head.
Well done. Yeah, not many. I've never thought of that before, but a
There
good
you go.
conversation, I suppose. One of the best things that I always argue and say that the OG can't be touched is because the perspective is third person, so it's very drawn back. And I always thought that heightens the experience because it seemed like someone was watching you. Whereas in the remake, it's over the shoulder, so it's a lot more personal and a bit more intimate. And it doesn't have that otherworldly quality because it's a really silly game, really, Silent Hill 2. The dialogue's pretty terrible for the most part, but because it's this otherworldly place, there is something rather alien about it. And there's arguments out there that the dialogue is so bad because there's something not right with this place and people don't communicate in the right way. And I'm so glad you enjoyed it. And as you,
I
I'm
did.
completely respect, it's not going to be in your top 10, but I'm so glad you went through it.
I am as well. Really enjoying it. I just think that I was laughing there when you're talking about that because your third in English literature is coming out there when you're talking about everything in the place and stuff like that. And in my head, I was thinking on my last stream of it, I said to someone who knew the game quite well, I said, obviously, I'm streaming it tomorrow. Do I need to have another game ready? How long have I got left? And he said, there's probably about 45 minutes to an hour left in the game. But for you, I'd say probably 4 hours. Now, this isn't a skill issue, but if you've been in my streams, I go off on them and I ramble. And to be fair, that's the whole point of streaming is interacting with the community. But you were talking about everything's there for a place and a reason. I've actually sent a TikTok to Konami today. I don't think they'll pick it up. But you go into an employees lounge in the Lakeview Hotel, right? And there's a fridge, there's some settees and stuff, and on the side is a little portable TV. And my community were adamant it was a microwave. And I've just edited the footage today for the TikTok. I spent 45 minutes in that room or going out and coming back to it to argue with all the people in chat that this was a TV and not a microwave. So I would like you, Boxy, with your enlightened opinions to go on my TikTok, have a look at the video, and please give me a comment. Is it a TV or is it a microwave?
I think this is why maybe the game didn't hit quite as hard for you because you're faffing around with this shit rather than experiencing the game. And I'm no disrespect to what you do in your community and your streaming, but Silent Hill 2 is not a game you should be streaming on.
It's not. No, it's not.
It's a game you should be playing. Games,
like I'm playing Alan Wake 2 at the minute, and I'm playing it off stream. It's not an on stream game and stuff like that. But when it comes to games like that, and when my community loves Silent Hill, I was saying this as well. I don't watch as many streamers as sort of other people do. I think I know some streamers watch streams, some don't. But I was asking the question, I put a video out. I think some people vicariously were, especially my, there's two or three who, for you, Silent Hill 2 is one of their favourite games of all time. And they vicariously sort of played the game for the first time again, watching me play it for the first time. And I like to give that to my sort of community and stuff like that. But when I want to play that game, there's certain games that I'm really excited about because survival horror I enjoy, but it's not like my out there genre. So there's certain games where I think I'll keep that for off stream. But for that one, I did enjoy playing it. Anyway, so I played that one. And then this past week, I've streamed three or four times. I have played four James Bond games on the PS2. Ooh. I played Agent Under Fire and Nightfire one night because I'd played them a lot as a kid, so it was just like a refresher. I played Everything or Nothing, and then I played From Russia with Love to try and work out which is the best PS2 James Bond.
Just a bit of context here. So a few episodes ago, Tom put me through the ringer because I said that GoldenEye had aged like four-week-old milk, and he said, I can't believe you're putting Everything or Nothing above GoldenEye.
Yeah.
And I very confidently said, it's a great game and it's extremely underrated. And I think you need to admit that GoldenEye is past its time. So now, should I be drinking some cognac and smoking a huge cigar right now while you apologize profusely?
No, because I played the PS2. I didn't play the GoldenEye one, so I can't put that in there. But I will concede Everything or Nothing is the best PS2 Bond game out there. It was so much fun. And I thought I'd played it as a kid, but I hadn't. Because as soon as I went in, there was nothing I could remember. Nightfire and Agent Under Fire, I definitely played them like hours and hours and hours. And I had a lot of nostalgia with them. What the Bond games did great on the PS2 is because I played them in order. I think they were like sort of yearly and one of them was like a two-year gap. I didn't play Rogue Agent, but I think that was like different studio and stuff. Every single one improved or learned off the last one. The controls in Agent Under Fire are rough. Aiming's not as great. They try to improve that in Nightfire and the controls are better. And then they got it down to a T in Everything or Nothing. From Russia with Love is a great game. Really good game. And it holds up the day. However, it has a terrible Sean Connery impression. Really bad. In the cutscenes, it's okay. But when it goes to like little lines when you're talking, it's so bad. But I was saying, I think it is probably because Sean Connery is such a well-known voice that if it's not on point, you can recognise it. If it was if it was like Timothy Dalton, I don't think I'd recognise much difference. Do you know what I mean? Unless he's going, boy, oh, it's James Bond. But yeah, it was really bad. But because they had to follow the beats of the movie a little bit, I think Everything or Nothing was its own thing. So it could just be fun, exciting, really, really good. And for some reason, I'm watching the credits from Russia with Love, and it's like, Natasha Bedingfield. I'm like, what? Why is Natasha Bedingfield in From Russia with Love? And then someone told us it's like a reimagining with Natasha Bedingfield in, which is not something I knew I needed in my life, but
what you don't realise is, Tom, Natasha Bedingfield was actually in the original Rush from Russia with Love back in the 1960s. She's aged very well.
Very well. I think her credits were unwritten.
Unspunked.
I've got you to genuinely laugh at a terrible joke. That is my life complete. That was a really bad one. Yeah,
I live for those.
Through the whole stream, I just kept singing Daniel Bedingfield, and people in chat kept going, "That's Daniel Bedingfield." I was like, "I know. I like Daniel Bedingfield."
I feel bad for Natasha really because she was objectively the better artist, but because Daniel had that one song that everyone knew, she gets very overlooked. I think.
What about If you're not the one, then do, do. No.
The only one I remember from his was, I gotta get through this.
Yeah, that's what I sang basically the whole time, every time she popped up, and everyone went, that's Daniel Benfield. It's like, I know. Just, if I start singing Unwritten, no one's going to know what Unwritten is because you're all heathens. It's a great song. I agree with you. Natasha Bedingfield is the better Bedingfield.
Are you sure it's Natasha Bedingfield or is it Natalie Imbruglia?
Anyway.
That's everything a callback.
There's long-term story writing in this podcast. Go and listen to all the others and find out where it is. Everything or Nothing, just really good fun. And what the Bond games on the PS2 did well, they didn't try to be a shooter. They didn't try to be anything else apart from making you feel like a badass James Bond. Like, yeah. in From Russia Love and Everything or Nothing, you don't really have to aim. Like, it locks on and you can fire. But you're not playing a COD or an online multiplayer shooter. You want to be James Bond. And just going through stuff and judo chopping and stuff like that. So I will give you that one. It is a really good game. But for the whole of gaming as a whole entity, GoldenEye is still superior.
Okay. Well,
but if I was going to go back now when someone said, do you want to play GoldenEye or Everything or Nothing? I would play Everything or Nothing.
Well, clearly that's a better game then.
No.
No?
No.
Well, it sounds like you're blinded by nostalgia again.
It's aged better. But remember, when I said GoldenEye was better, I said we would remake it. So it doesn't matter whether it aged better or not, because we're remaking it. You don't know the context of your own show.
As we said, a remake of GoldenEye would just be some shitty Call of Duty knockoff. But Everything or Nothing does have a ton of good ideas. Every level is something new. And as you say, you just feel like a badass. You're jumping off motorbikes onto moving planes. You've got little spider cams infiltrating enemy bases. Such a good game. And the first mission in VR, great idea for a training mission.
And you get to
learn the ropes.
Got a little serotonin buzz every time I got a Bond move. I love the Bond move mechanic. A lot of them are really obvious, but you still feel like such a genius for shooting the crane and dropping the boxes on them rather than just taking them out. Like, it's just such a good little mechanic. Definitely when we were talking about the games on that previous pod, GoldenEye I would have kept the same, but I think I put Agent Under Fire and Nightfire above Everything or Nothing. I think I would definitely swap them over now. Definitely.
Oh, I'm glad you've seen the light. Yeah. Just to divert slightly, what's your favourite Bond film?
It's got to be, because it was the first one I saw at the cinema, GoldenEye. And we had this conversation a lot on stream, because I streamed 3 days in a row all these Bond games. And Pierce Brosnan was an amazing Bond who had terrible films after GoldenEye. Like Tomorrow Never Dies, The World Is Not Enough. There's one more, can't remember.
Die Another Day.
Die Another Day, so bad. But yeah, that was a great Bond.
Die Another Day was the invisible car in the ice.
Was that Halle Berry as well?
It was, yeah.
And Madonna, I remember Madonna's terrible theme tune.
Die Another Day.
Yeah, that one.
Where he's being tortured.
I didn't think it could be worse.
I thought Duran Duran's song was terrible.
That was Dalton, wasn't it? Timothy Dalton? Thunderball?
Yeah, that was A View to a Kill.
A View to a Kill.
No, Thunderball was Tom Jones.
Double Welsh. What's your favourite one then?
If we're going classic, I think Goldfinger.
No, we're going one. All the others
just
deleted.
Just one. There's only one.
Sean Connery, Spaniard.
The one I think is most entertaining, and the one I will happily watch when it comes on the telly, is Casino Royale. Mm. I think that's a great film.
I love a lot of the Daniel Craig ones, but I see them less Bondy. They had to change with the times, but for me, Bond's Daft Gadgets, a little bit tongue in cheek. You know what I mean? The one line is like Craig. I was gonna say Craig David. That's my favourite Bond, Craig David. Daniel.
What
Craig.
Did you do on day 7?
Bond does a lot of Day 7, I tell you that. I think if we were Bond characters, Boxy, I feel like I'd be Bond and you'd be Q.
Yeah, that would work.
Yeah.
I'd just be like, for God's sake, Bond.
Stop fucking breaking everything, basically. I mean, that Q has never said that to Bond, but you know what I mean, you get the gist.
I could give it the old Ben Whishaw.
You're more of a John Cleese to me.
Really?
Mm.
I thought Ben did a good job. He was very dry.
He did. I'm saying you're
I
more
like
of
a
a
bit of dry.
John Cleese.
You know what? Someone, Good Game Dan, on TikTok, who's a great creator, go and follow him. He said, "I'm like Monty Python." I'm like, I've never aimed for that, but thank you.
I was
That's
going to say that
really
is
kind.
that is a great thing to say. The best and to finish off what I've been playing, the best thing, and you can imagine how many times I heard this, is on my stream. You can send little stickers through if you're a subscriber, and I got one of Sean Bean saying, "One does not simply die, Mr. Bond." But when they put it on, I could link it to a sound effect where it was Alan Partridge going, "Stop doing Bond wrong." So obviously, as I was playing through, every time I died, every time I knocked up a stealth section, I was just peppered with Alan Partridge shouting at us, telling us not to do Bond, which just entertained me the whole. I don't think it entertained anyone else apart from me. But if I'm not making content for myself, who am I making it for? Anyway, let's get
Anyway.
away from what we've been playing, and a segment we're giving back to you after my roaring success last week with the absolutely amazing logic mind bending. And good trivia, because you got the right answers and people will agree when in the comments. We go back to your dross. So it is time, Boxy, for your trivia.
First of all, don't take dross away from me. That's my word. I am so glad to be back in the hot seat. This is trivia. This is my favorite part of the podcast, where we put Tom's knowledge to the test to find out whether he's a true gamer or whether he's one of these posers who thinks that Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice is some sort of insane curry challenge. Right. And it kind of taps into what you were talking about, whether on this episode or the episode before, about world records, about how you wanted a world record in slowest speed running. So I thought I would dig into the archives of the Guinness World Records. More specifically, games that have been in the Guinness World Records.
Can I just say something before we get into this? We are becoming in sync.
Why?
Because we talk about things that the other one has got ready queued up to talk about. This is
Exactly.
peeling the curtain back, but we had a wee in between recording exactly the same amount of time. I'm talking about Guinness World Records, and you've already written notes about it. Our periods will be in sync next.
We've always been a bit telescopic, haven't we? As Del Boy would say. Okay. But it's nice. And as you were talking about it, I very nearly blew my beans and said, "Oh, that's what I've got for trivia later," but I thought I'd keep you guessing. So, I am going to say some categories which games are in the Guinness World Records for, and you have to guess what game is in it. Now, I have to kind of specify with this because I can see you getting a bit confused with maybe with some of them that these are not to date Guinness World Records. So these are just ones that have entered at specific periods, okay? So if there are games which you think are more deserving of the award, they may not be in there because of
Because it hadn't been released
timings.
or something.
Yeah.
Okay, get ya, get ya.
Okay, now I have got quite a few of these, so we're just going to go until you get one right or you get bored. We'll see.
I think
So,
I know which one will be first.
okay, all right, let's try. So, we'll start with one of the easier ones, I would say. I think you could probably get this one, maybe within one or two guesses.
Okay.
Best-selling video game of all time.
Tetris.
Nope.
No way is Tetris not, in all its iterations, the best-selling game.
Nope.
Is it a series or is it a singular game?
It's a thing on its own.
It's a thing. That doesn't answer the question. Is it a series or just a game on its own?
It's not. It.
Because you
No, it's
said
not a series.
thing, so like, is it the Mario Brothers games and it's all in a
No,
game?
no,
Right,
no.
okay, so okay.
It's one game.
Right, okay. One game that sold more. There's two that are in my head at the minute now. One of them that came out with a console, which made it class it as the best-selling game as a tech demo technically, and another one that's just had a movie released. I'm gonna go for Minecraft.
Well done, mate. Second guess. I knew you'd get that one.
Do you know
It
what?
is
Have I got
Minecraft.
it?
I thought you were going to say GTA 5.
No, I feel like that's longevity. If there was a category for like longest online player or whatever and stuff like that, I might have went for that. But no. I got it when I had my two games there because of your eyebrow raised.
Yeah, like, I'm giving stuff away. We shouldn't really be on camera.
Can we play poker one day?
Ooh, these are good cards. Okay, let's crack on with this train in motion.
Okay.
Worst dialogue in a video game.
I know what you're leaning for us to say.
And it's not our fan favourite.
Oh, right, okay, that's what I was going to go to straight away. I feel like the game probably won't have the worst voice acting of all time, but how big it is will sort of push it up because more people know it.
Okay, it's not worst voice acting, it's worst dialogue.
Ah, well, same thoughts though. There's probably games with worse dialogue, but you're going to have bigger games in there because of it, so... Resident Evil?
Mate, you're smashing it.
Oh,
clearly,
yes.
the dragon soup is kicking your brain up several notches.
Well, this is it. Last episode, I was talking about being a Guinness record holder, and you've got to know your own jazz, haven't you? If I want to be a record holder, I've got to know about records. So there we go. We found my jam.
You got to do your market research.
Yep.
All right, let's continue. I'm staggeringly impressed so far. Let's find a good one. I don't really know why this made the Guinness World Records, but apparently it did. First video game to use cell shading.
First one to use cell shading. I'm thinking it's... Was there a PS1 game with cell shading? I'm thinking PS2. Only because it's a game I like. And I can't think of any before. I'll go with 13.
Not too far off.
Right.
You're probably... a console behind, I would say.
So it's PS1. Cell shading PS1 game. Or what, PS1 era. Can I have another clue? Come on, I've did well on the first couple.
I think you mentioned it in your Billy Joel rendition.
Jet Set Radio?
Jet Set Radio.
Oh, yes. I don't think I've got it without the clue.
No.
But as soon as you said it, it was really obvious. I didn't realise that was the first ever cell shaded game.
I thought it would be Sly Cooper, but I think that was later. That
Jet Set Radio was on like a Dreamcast game.
Dreamcast, yeah. But 13 was a good shout. I probably wouldn't have known that, to be fair. And I thought Jet Set Radio was later, but clearly not.
You might be thinking like Jet Set Radio Future came out on the original Xbox.
Maybe. Okay. One very close to my heart. Most swearing in a video game.
Conker's Bad Fur Day?
That didn't have that much swearing in it.
The Scouse Dung Beetles came straight into my mind when you said swearing in a game and a massive shit, singing about being a massive shit. Sort of, that's the first thing. But to be
listen to my scat, you little fucking twat, or something he says.
N64, Nintendo for the family. It can't be PS1. I don't, like, I know I use PS1, but I mean... that era, it's... Would it? The most swearing. Is it a series that you want to buy off me?
No. Is it a series... Well, it's a game we've spoken about.
We're 8 episodes in now, man. We're talking about bloody everything.
Okay, do you want another hint?
Yeah.
It's a film as well, which is also notorious for its swearing.
Scarface?
Scarface.
Ah, see, I've not played it, but it was... Yeah.
Do you want to, for an extra point,
how many...
I highly doubt you're going to get this, how many F-bombs do they say in Scarface?
I'm assuming, because it's open world Scarface, isn't it? So I'm assuming they're just meaning in the dialogue, because that's a hard one, because you could bump into an NPC who says, fuck off, and if you keep doing that, so I'm assuming it just means the main dialogue. Right, okay.
And I'll let you have, because it's very specific, I'll let you
just
have
F-bomb,
it.
Or just swearing in general?
F-bomb.
F-bomb.
And if you can get it within 500, I'll give
within
it to you.
Within 500?
Yeah.
Christ. I thought you were going to say within like 10. 500. Thank you.
So this surprised me. This puts me to shame.
All right, so if I say 1,000, that takes us 500 to 1,500. It can't be more than that. I'm going to say 1,000.
Okay, brace yourself. 5,688.
Oh, that is... just in main dialogue.
Yeah, apparently. That's more reason to play it, if you ask me.
I was going to say that definitely moves it up the list. And maybe not on stream, but it definitely moves it up the list.
Right, your last one. Mm-hmm. Okay, so final one. And similar to the Jet Set Radio one, I'm quite surprised it's made the Guinness World Records, but there you go. Most critically divisive survival horror video game.
Most critically decisive survival horror game is a category for the Guinness World Records. If they don't put me in as the world's slowest speedrunner, I will be livid.
Okay, it's critically divisive.
Critically divisive. What did I say?
Derivative? I don't know. It was the wrong word, whatever it was.
Whatever. Right. Critically decisive.
Divisive.
Decisive. That's what I keep saying. Divisive survival horror game. So it's got to be a game. Survival horror, some people love, some people hate. It's hard thinking of a game that people will love and hate.
Do you want a clue?
Yes, please.
It did get a sequel.
The first Silent Hill? No.
It got one sequel.
It got one sequel. Condemned Criminal Origin?
That was a great game.
Yeah, it was great. Brilliant.
No,
I was going to say, I don't know why people would hate that one, because it was first game out on, I think it was a release title, wasn't it? So, you're there. No, not Condemned. Outlast?
Nope.
Oh, I'm just scraping the barrel here of survival horror games that have only got one sequel, aren't they?
Do you want one more clue?
Yeah, I'm going to need it.
It was inspired by Twin Peaks.
Oh, Deadly Premonition.
Deadly Premonition.
That's a game I really want to play. I've never played it. And that's a game I definitely want to play on stream.
Yeah.
Is it true that you can drive around and like you run out of petrol and that's your game knackered? Like, you've got to walk the rest of it or whatever?
I can't remember that bit, but you have to shave. That's a mechanic. You always have to shave.
Like, do you have to shave? Or can you just say, yeah, he's getting a beard? Or like, does your psyche go down if he's a bit gruff?
Something.
I'm assuming it's a man. It could be armpits. Could be a woman. Could be a hairy woman. Could be a Sasquatch.
It's a man. Oh. I can't completely remember what happens because it's been a long time since I played it. But shaving is definitely a big thing you have to keep an eye on. You're either going to love it or you're going to hate it. It's technically awful.
Yeah.
It plays terribly. It's got this budget over the shoulder Resi 4 style going on, but it's very buggy, very broken. It runs like crap, but it has charm. And I think the Guinness World Records were going on the basis that it got reviews of 10 out of 10 right down to 2 out of 10.
Right. Okay.
And the sequels,
that's a hard metric to put as like a record, isn't it? Most divisive game, because you've got to...
You're struggling with that word, aren't you?
the fact that I've knocked it up two or three times made us really think about it. Because obviously a really divisive game, like sort of your average score, it would be like around about a 5 out of 10, because you got your top and you got your bottom. But it must be hard to... Well, yeah, that's a hard one.
But to do, it's good, really, because I like it, because it tapped into subjectively, emotionally, how people connect to a game.
Yeah.
And how people just look at games as technical spectacles, you know, because if you look at Deadly Premonition on just how it runs and how it plays, it's fucking terrible. Yeah. But if you look at the storyline, the dialogue, the weird atmosphere, the vibes that it all has, it's kind of intriguing. So,
well, it's a very survival horror sort of trope, isn't it? Like, we were talking about Silent Hill earlier on, and I said the gameplay wouldn't be like, is what's like stopped it being up there for me. I remember like getting stuck in a corridor and there was two of those bed enemies, and I was trying to get the end but not waste ammo, and I literally just couldn't get past them, and I was it was just annoying us. But like, it's the same with Resi games, and when you mentioned before about the weaknesses being strengths, it adds to the sort of keeping your ammo, because in my head I was like, well, do I just take them out so I can quickly run past this corridor every time, or do I save my ammo for later on? Or when you come up to an encounter, it's not like, I'm really good at this, I'm going to be able to take the enemies out. It's, the controls are a bit clunky, so I have to be wary of every single enemy, and that's what a survival horror game is about. So this sort of those weaknesses can lean into what makes it a good game and a genre, really, can't it?
Yeah, the original Resi is perfect example of that, particularly the remake one that they did on the GameCube. Yeah. And the ink ribbons, saving your game, limited supply, trying to decide when to save your game. Frustrating and kind of annoying, but kind of genius in the same way.
Yeah.
So that was your trivia, and you did surprisingly well, I have
to
say.
Thank you.
So on that basis, can we just continue with me doing trivia?
I think every now and again I might wade in. I might wait and see.
I like the change. Although you did take it in a direction that wasn't really trivia. It was more shitty late night gambling channel.
No, it wasn't. It was better than your round. You're just angry that you haven't thought of it first. So I had to use my mind, my intelligence, to come up with amazing clues where you just Googled Guinness World Records. Oh, there's some questions. Like, well, I'm just going to say, who's prepped the most? Me in one round of trivia over you with seven rounds of trivia.
But you have to admit, that last round was quite tasty.
No, you're just saying that because you think I'll agree because I got some right. I don't base my opinions on whether I got it right or not. I base it on how enjoyable was it. Now, all your round to there has done to me has made it more set in my mind that I'm going for this Guinness World Record. Because it's made me realise there are ridiculous world records out there. And for me, I would be more interested if I opened up a gamer's Guinness World Record. Ooh, I'm on page 2, 3. Ooh, here's a page here. One page here has got a little article about the most divisive, said it right, divisive survival horror game of all time. What a ridiculous Guinness World Record. Let's see what's on the other page. What's on the other page? It's a Cinderella story. A young lad from Sunderland came to be the slowest he could be on so many games. That, to me, you can't put that down.
Aren't you a bit worried that, all right, there's worse speedrunner, but don't you think...
No, not worse, not worse, slowest, there's a difference.
Well, yeah, but you are the worst.
No, I'm not the worst.
If you're last place, you are the worst.
No, I'm not the worst.
Well, you are.
No, because there's people slower than me. They just don't put them on the speedrun.com, so I'm not the worst.
Yeah, but on paper, you are the worst.
No, because, right, here we go. So, if someone genuinely tries to speedrun a game and they come in place 122 in the world, right, and then I speedrun the game, well, I play the game, just normal. I might be 6 hours slower than them, but I'm talking to chat. I've not got a guide. I don't know any strategies. I'm just playing it raw, unlubed, just straight in there. Who's better? Someone who's trying to be quick and is 122, or someone who's playing a blind and entertaining the masses while doing it? So I'm not going for worse because that's subjective.
You say entertaining very optimistically.
Mm-hmm.
I don't agree with that. I think if you're last place on a speedrunning list, you are the worst.
No, because
I'm not
trying to be the quickest. I'm trying.
You're
to be,
the worst.
No, I'm trying to be the slowest. So in that respect, I'm the best because every time I've done it, I have got the slowest speed. First time, every time. How many people in number one who are going for number one get first time straight away? Hardly any. Low percentage, less than one, and I am right and successful 100% of the time.
This is some A-grade delusion going on right here. Any psychologists listening, there's so much to unpack here with Mr. Revival.
Right.
Can we move on?
If you were going to do a game and world record, which is one that you think you could genuinely get? Putting time and effort in. Let's say you've got the next 3 years of your life. The family leave you. You lose your job.
Probably Cuphead.
What, speed run?
Like, yeah, I platinumed it. So yeah. I think that's probably the one on paper I would probably have a fair crack at.
So do you think you would be quicker than the actual speedrunners out there? After 3 years, what do you think?
Absolutely not. Like, it's not.
So
it's not
my goal is achievable.
But it's a rubbish goal to achieve. Like, set your standards higher, for God's sake.
You're just jealous. You're just jealous that I am going to have a world record on my wall behind me and you're going to have to look at it every time we do this podcast. To be fair, if it's not a record already, I could just get it now, but I feel like I need more than two games, which is why this Saturday, which will be 2 weeks ago, I am speedrunning Metal Gear Solid 2 Sons of Liberty from the start till the finish. Probably going to be streaming about 13 hours.
That's about right, isn't it? That's about the length of the game.
But obviously I'm going to be last because I won't skip the cutscenes and do all this.
Yeah.
Like, the time is like 1-2 hours for the, like...
I was going to say, like, 80% of that game is cutscenes.
Yeah. So, I'm just going to enjoy it. So by the time this goes out, I will have three games that I'm the slow sat in case, unless I cock it up somehow. I'm in actual Metal Gear Solid speedrun discords now because I was looking online and you have to have a look at the rules of what your run needs to be for it to like be verified. And one of them is you can't load. It has to be straight shot, start the game all the way through. And I was like, what happens if I die? Because it goes that screen and it goes on continue. I was like, does that count as a load? So I actually went into a Metal Gear Solid 2 speedrun and Discord. I'm still in there now. And I went and I was like, hi, everyone. And everyone was like, oh, hi. There's like loads of actual speedrunners for Metal Gear Solid 2. And I was like, when you speedrun Metal Gear Solid 2, if you die and hit continue, does that count as like loading it or will my run still count? And this guy, bless, genuinely sort of like trying to help a new speedrunner was like, oh, yeah, as long as you don't save. If you hit continue on the game over screen, that's absolutely fine. You can do it. But if you go into the menu, load, get another point, it doesn't count. It's like, what part do you think is going to be tricky? What, like, strategy or whatever? And I was just like, oh, nothing. I'm just playing it blind without doing anything, and I'm probably going to die a few times. And he's like, ah, oh, okay. And then no one's talked to us since.
Not surprised. You're like the... I don't know, the kid who walks into the NBA standing at 4'5" saying, I'm going to be the next Michael Jordan, and everyone's just laughing at you.
But you thinking, remember oh, him. This. You remember him.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, everyone loves an underdog story, so I can only say good luck. You've set your life bar incredibly low.
Just call me Mr. Limbo.
Wish you the best.
I don't need your best, I'll do it. If you're coming at me saying that I've got low life goals, I don't need luck. I can achieve mediocrity so well.
It's not even mediocrity. It's below that.
Exactly.
Anyone can be the slowest. You might as well just put it on, leave the house for 7 hours, come back and pick it up again, and then you'll still be the worst.
No, it's not. You don't understand. Let's move on before you make me angry. So... I've been drinking the Incredible Hulk piss, and you wouldn't like me when I'm angry, so let's move on. So, it is that time, Boxy's hot take. Boxy, what is your steaming hot take for this week?
I think it's one you might get behind me with, to be fair. It was quite a meaty one last year, and we got very deep, and I didn't quite get all the points that I wanted to articulate out, and it was one of those things, you know, when... you have a debate and you come out of it and you think, oh, I'm not sure how well that went. And you're in the shower or the bath and you think, you know what? I should have said that. That would have completely annihilated the whole debate. And it was the bit...
Is this when you were saying that you were completely against accessibility tools, when you're completely against free will? Is this the argument that you try and defend?
No, that's the argument that you... painted over my original point that I was trying to make.
Please listen back to episode 6. If you want to hear that argument, it's not as black and white as I've just put it.
But this one is fairly straightforward, I would say. So this is a general point, and I'm talking more about the future and where gaming is kind of going. I think that we should stop focusing on realism in gaming. I think that... we've got to this point where the only thing we're trying to achieve is reality. And in the last few years, we've had very immersive games with very realistic mechanics. And it's very impressive, don't get me wrong. But I kind of get to the point where I think, where are we trying to go with this? Are we just trying to get to a point where we're just trying to simulate life as it is. And there are loads of games out there, and don't get me wrong, there are games that I actually really enjoy, like Power Wash Simulator. I think it's very relaxing. But there's Lawnmower Simulator, there's Farming Simulator, there's all this kind of stuff. But regardless of all those kind of job titles that come out every now and then, even the mainstream games, the new GTA 6 is going to have very realistic mechanics. I'm sure it will. Red Dead 2 broke the mold for realism in gaming, excuse me, with taking care of your horse, with traversal, with eating, with shaving, with cleaning. Kingdom Come Deliverance, the second one's just come out. I haven't played it, but the first one was so realistic that you had to really look after yourself in order to progress the game and do well. There are open world games as well, which shoehorn in these really weird modes where you have to brake at red lights and drive like a normal person. And part of me thinks, okay, this is fine, it's impressive and okay, but we're playing a game. It's not supposed to be realistic. When I game, it's an escape. It's taking me out of reality. It's making me experience something that is beyond my own comprehension. And I love games that are stupid, and I could name loads of them. Saints Row 4, an open world game where you can run crazy fast, you can jump crazy high, you can shoot lasers out your hands, you can fuck with stuff in crazy ways. And then there are these games that do all this realistic stuff, and there's realistic movements, and I just think, what are we trying to achieve here? I mean, are you just trying to impress me, or is this where we're supposed to be going? And what I guess what I'm asking is, what is the end point? Are we trying to get to a point where it's just real life and we're just simulating what we would normally do in day-to-day life? And for me, that isn't what gaming is. We started off fighting aliens in space with Space Invaders, and then we went on to be a plumber who kills turtles with hammers. So I think the more we try and go down this road, we're going to lose our creativity, and gaming is going to lose so much of what makes it special. So all I'm saying is, keep it silly. Don't try and bring me into my own reality. Just go crazy and it will be so much better.
This is 8 episodes in, and we'll get on to it after this. I think in a way, sort of the end of our first season for normal episodes, because we've got a couple of episodes coming up that we know that we want to do, and we will talk about them at the end of the show. And it has taken till the last episode for me to completely agree with you.
Oh, I just came.
Well, on that note, I think it's always been something to strive for, because I think we know, growing up, there was never going to be realism in games when you're on 8-bit, 16-bit, 32-bit, whatever. And it was always the goal of the next generation of, oh, let's look how realistic we can make it. And it was always I remember like everyone banging on about, oh, look at these water physics, and that was the next big thing, that it was these physics and blah blah, went on during the generations. And I think over the last couple of generations, what they've realised is, we can't really go much further with the graphics now. We expect the game to look good or artistically stylized, whatever it is. It's got to. If it's not, they haven't put the effort in, because most games, smaller indie games and stuff like that, can like Senua's Sacrifice. Look how good that looks, and that's an indie studio. So if you can't make your game look good, then what are you doing? I say that with all the coding and programming knowledge that I have myself. So I think they've moved on to the, right, well, what's the next thing we can do? Right, let's make the game realistic. And you go to Half-Life 2 and everyone sort of getting hard about the physics engine with the gravity gun and stuff like that. And I think it's more like a my dick's bigger than yours contest, sort of, I can be realer, I can be there. And I do think, in general, the fun out of games has gone. And this is a conversation, actually, at the start of us doing the podcast, I might have had a slightly different opinion. But since I've stopped platinum hunting, which for me was a thief of fun and sort of enjoying games, because it became a chore, I've really started like enjoying games more and playing games that, oh, I like that. I'm not going to play it because it's terrible, or I am going to keep powering through this and play it how I want it. And games were always originally made to be fun, because originally they were for the arcade, and if you weren't fun, you weren't putting your money in to play again. Whereas now, and I do think games that are realistic sort of have their place, and there will be people who like them. And for me, I would take away Power Wash Simulator and your Farming Simulator and stuff like that, because in a way, I don't think they're sort of realistic. The way that you do stuff and that, like, if you're playing Farming Simulator, you're not waiting 3 months for your crops to come through or anything like that. But when you go to Red Dead Redemption and stuff like that, I absolutely adored Red Dead Redemption 2's narrative. And Arthur Morgan's story and story arc, I think, is amazing. But I don't want to watch a little animation every time I have to skin a friggin' animal. I don't want to have to wash or people won't talk to us and that type of stuff. You are taking it away from the fun of the game. And I just, again, I don't see why, apart from a look at this, it's great. Like, you know, earlier on when you said best-selling game, I thought you'd go for GTA 5. I didn't go for GTA 5. It is probably the closest to like a real-world simulator you can get on a big scale, on a big, massive scale. That don't make it fun. You know what I mean? Right. There's games out there that I would play better for a shooter. There's games I'd play out there that are better for a narrative. There's games that I play out there that are better for driving. I play Grand Theft Auto because it's a marvel. And Grand Theft Auto 6, I am not hyped about. I am really not as hyped as everyone's going on about, because Rockstar have became this sort of studio when they bring out the Grand Theft Autos, the Red Dead Redemptions. They are great games, but again, it can be from that, oh, look, it's like real life. The NPC goes home and has his tea and then comes out and goes to work. I'm not following the fucking NPCs home. What do I care? Do you know what I mean? As long as they're slightly realistic when they're in my sort of sphere. I just think if they put their effort into other areas of the game, how good could those games be to play? Because they're already great games. But imagine Red Dead Redemption if they put a lot more into making the gameplay fun rather than realistic. They are amazing. And I think we're going to get absolutely blasted in the comments and people thinking about this. Because people do adore those games. But
I don't think it's a detriment to the games. Because, as you say, they're great narratives and they're great storylines, and clearly a ton of effort went into them. But it's just
thinking about this, is Grand Theft Auto 5 a good narrative?
I mean, I think GTA 4 has the best narrative, and that's always the one which kind of gets overlooked, I always think. But the gameplay is the stuff that shines in GTA 5 over that. But as you say, Red Dead 2 is a great story, but they spent so much time and money and effort on all this unnecessary filler and padding of the realism that, as you say, is impressive, but it does nothing for me. And I can't remember who said it, but someone gave the analogy of it's like watching someone drink a huge vat of olive oil. And it's like, okay, it's impressive, but I still don't get it. Like, what are you trying to achieve?
Well, it's like, I always, when you talk about realism there and you were talking about Red Dead, I immediately went to the horse having a shit, because everyone, like, oh, look, you leave your horse and it has a shit. The first time I saw that, I thought, oh, that's quite cool. That's quite impressive. But then I didn't pay attention again. And how many hours probably went into when that, because I honestly wouldn't put past Rockstar to like being, right, well, it's only going to shit when you give it this amount of thing. And that's so much programming that could have went towards making the game more fun. I'm not saying the game isn't fun. Again, I'm with you. I'm not saying the game's not fun. I'm just saying all that time and effort could have went into making it even better or another project. How often have Rockstar knocked games out recently? They used to be like practically yearly with the original Grand Theft Autos, and look at them now.
Slam dunk every year in the early 2000s, and now we've got to wait what, 10
two
years
console
or whatever it
generations.
is.
Grand Theft Auto 5
Yeah.
came out on the Xbox 360. It's mental.
People say, oh, it's immersive and it's taking you into the world and all that stuff. But this story's about a cowboy, and I'm clearly not a cowboy. And if they just had the story, that would be fine. It's going to bring me into that world and it's going to do a great job. And I just never get this whole direction with it. And I slagged off Kingdom Come Deliverance terribly on one of my videos. And it got a lot of support, but a lot of people came back and said, you clearly don't get it. You know, this is peak gaming. This is immersive. This is making you realize that you have to commit to this character and look after him and go above and beyond to make it
Tamagotchi Simulator 2025.
pretty much. And when you start off, the combat is terrible. The combat is atrocious in that game. But all the people who love it say, yeah, because you need to play the game and you need to put hours and hours and hours into the combat and it gets easier because that's what real life would be. Hang on, I am playing a game here. This isn't real life. I'm not going to learn how to wield a sword. I'm not that kind of guy.
The
And what?
only positives and the only thing I can say where it'd be good for is when they put all this in and all this effort and how much programming into, I would say your the stuff going around you, not your mechanics. Okay, so Red Dead Redemption, I'm talking about the horse having a crap. I'm talking about your NPCs' action of life. If they put all that effort in and that programming and that coding and stuff's there to be used in other games, so in future you don't have to put that effort in to have NPCs to have life. You've got that coding that makes it easier. It's quickly great when I have games where the NPCs like actually have life where you don't have to put the effort in. That's good, but then still the realism in what you have to do takes away from it. I don't want to have to, unless I'm playing like a game where the mechanic is surviving, getting food, stuff like that. I don't want, I'm having this gunfight and I don't want to think, oh shit, I've not had my tea. Do you know what I mean? It just, I'm completely on board with you.
Yeah, and it started off. I don't know if it was GTA San Andreas, you know, when they used to do those stats where hunger, muscle, lung capacity, and if you didn't do it, if you didn't look after it, then it just went down and down and down and down. And there were some missions. I remember, I don't know, about a quarter into the game, you couldn't start a mission unless your lung capacity was at a certain level. So you had to go and jump in the sea and fuck about just swimming around for about 20 minutes just to get your lung capacity up, just so you could progress the game. And to me, that is a huge detriment to your player and the game because you're just putting a huge roadblock up and just saying, no, you have to just faff about and do this one thing which we thought was a good idea. And back in those days, all that stuff was really celebrated. They said this is a new level of immersion and this is very thoughtful and clever. But now I just think it's got to a point where we're losing what a game is. Escapism. This isn't reality. These are things that we want to do. These are dreams. These are things we aspire to be. These are things that we read about, we watch in the films. I don't need to play a game where. I remember at the start of Heavy Rain, where you
You have to
get up,
shave, brush your teeth, all that
shave, brush
stuff.
your teeth, you fucking juggle, you wash the dishes, you set the table. Like, can we start this fucking game at some point? And there's arguments for, well, it's setting the tone, it's setting him up as a good father. Jason's a terrible father.
Jason is what he shouts with
Jason
his
is what
son.
his child is called. What's his name? Ethan. Ethan's a terrible.
I was gonna
Ethan's a
leave it
terrible
there for
father.
people to have you in the comments. I might just edit this bit out. I completely agree that the only time realism should be really put in is if it's a mechanic of the game that makes sense. Like you say, you've got those survival games where you have to get resources and you have to keep yourself alive, and that's the main mechanic of the game. Great. But if you're putting it in just for the sake of it to be real, why?
Why are why?
Why on earth?
I'm loving this moment. My pants are
It's
wet.
great.
I'm loving this camaraderie right here. We've
It
agreed.
feels dirty on me. It doesn't feel right. I feel like I need to have a butt, but I just don't. I just don't have one.
Maybe my dead gran will finally move on from Helsinki and cross over into paradise.
This could be the moment. This could be the moment.
Right. You have a special announcement for our next episode.
I do. Yes, I've got a special announcement. So we have got 8 episodes. We've got 2 episodes less to the end of season 1. 10 episodes in. Didn't think we would get here. I thought you'd just stop listening by now. But use a gluttons for punishment. Next week is going to be a special episode. We've got our second guest joining us on the podcast. We have the amazing Sam. Now, Sam is a voiceover artist. And he's also a sound designer, and he has worked on games such as Alan Wake 2. So we are very honoured to have him in and bring his actual talent and knowledgeable insight down to our shitty level. So we can't wait for that one. And then the week after that, we are going to end our season, our series, whatever you want to call it. How are we going to end our series, Boxy?
It's going to be a poignant moment, and when we do get to the last episode of the series, we're going to be smack in the middle of Mental Health Awareness Week. So we thought, in a surprising change, we're going to let our barriers down a little bit, and we're going to get a bit real, and we're going to talk about our past and how we cope with the everyday struggles of life and how gaming has kind of supported us in that journey. Specifically the games that mean a lot to us, that have done a lot for us in our life, while sharing some personal stories about how we deal with our own mental health. Surprisingly, me and Retro are not the most confident and strong-willed people on the planet, but we're going to make it our mission to be nice to each other and share some heartfelt stories about how we get through the sometimes struggle that is the everyday.
And I'm really looking forward to that episode. I know that sounds like a strange thing to say, but I am a big supporter of bringing awareness to mental health, to men's mental health, to all of those types of things. So look forward to those next couple of episodes. Again, we are weekly now, so that will be Sam next week and our last episode the week after that. So, with all that said and done, this is the last part of the podcast. So all is left for us to say, thank you very much for listening. You can find me, retro.revival1 on TikTok, and all my other stuff is on there on my profile. Boxy?
The one and only TikTok, at BoxyRT.
I feel like you're trying to make that a catchphrase now. The one and only. Chesney Hawks over here. I hope I've got that right. It's not an Alanis Morissette moment, but I think I have. And on that, we will say goodbye.
See you later.